भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 14, Text Number 23. Katam vina roma harsham. Javata chitasa vina. Vinannanda shukalaya. Sudyat bhaktya vinashaya. Katam. How? Vina, without. Roma harsham, standing of the hairs on end. Dravata, melted. Chetasa, heart. Vina, without. Vina, without. Ananda, of bliss. Ashru kalaya, the flowing of tears. Sudyet, can be purified. Bhaktya, loving service. Vina, without. Ashayaha, the consciousness. If one's hairs do not stand on end, how can the heart melt? And if the heart does not melt, how can tears of love flow from the eyes? If one does not cry in spiritual happiness, how can one render loving service to the Lord? And without such service, how can the consciousness be purified? Purport. Loving service to the Lord is the only process that can completely purify one's consciousness. Such service produces waves of ecstatic love that completely cleanse the soul. As mentioned earlier by Lord Krishna to Sri Uddhava, other processes such as self-control, pious activities, mystic yoga, penances, etc. certainly purify the mind, as stated in many authorized literatures. Such processes, however, do not completely remove the desire to perform forbidden activities, but pure devotional service rendered in love of Godhead is so powerful that it burns to ashes any obstacle encountered on the path of progress. The Lord has stated in this chapter that loving service to Him is a blazing fire that burns to ashes all impediments. In contrast, the small fires of mental speculation or mystic yoga can be extinguished by sinful desires at any moment. Thus, by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, one should ignite the blazing fire of loving service to the Lord and burn to ashes the network of material illusion. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Ananjana Salakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmaye Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svabhadantikam Mokam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langhayate Grinim Yat Kripata Mahambande Shri Gurum Dinatarinam. So, loving service of the Lord is the only process that can completely purify one's consciousness. Such service produces waves of ecstatic love that completely cleanse the soul. Krishna is explaining the superiority of bhakti over all of the other processes, yoga practice, performance of penances and austerities, study of the Vedas, pious activities, self-control, mystic yoga, whatever. And that devotional service or bhakti has to have, in order for it to be effective, has to have certain qualities. Anyabhilashita shunyam jnana kama jnana vritam anukulina krishnanam shilanam bhaktiya uttama. So devotional service or bhakti has to be of a certain quality for it to have an effect. In that case, then, that performance of bhakti is superior to all of the other activities recommended within the Vedas or the Vedic system. So, it's interesting, in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, in the Nectar of Devotion, Rupa Goswami begins his explanation of bhakti by explaining that devotional service, in order for it to be effective, has to be pure. And basically Prabhupada explains that pure devotional service is that activity which is devoid of any other desire other than to serve Krishna. And that devotional service then gives rise to certain qualities or characteristics. Kleshagni, pure devotional service destroys miseries. Each one of us is experiencing some form of misery in material existence. And Prabhupada explains, legal complications, ill health, lacking in influence, power, prominence. This is all as a result of reactions of our past misdeeds. So the power of pure devotional service is that one's miseries experienced in material existence, they're automatically removed. In other words, one's anxieties are taken away. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu mentions in the Shikshastika, Anandam Burivardhanam Pratipradam Purnam Ritasvardhanam. Right? That the performance of Sankirtan, especially the chanting of Hare Krishna, is so potent and powerful. If it is performed with a pure heart, actually even one doesn't have to have a pure heart, but the chanting of Hare Krishna is so powerful that even one with a contaminated heart can be purified. And immediately can experience this ananda. And so, at least in the beginning stages of devotional service, one feels a relief from material miseries, which is a beginning of, or a precursor, if you like, to the pleasure that's experienced in devotional service. The third item that's described by Rupa Goswami as a quality of devotional service is Sundarananda Visheshatma, which means that one feels happy. And we see that even people who are not practiced in chanting Hare Krishna, when they hear the sound of the holy name, then immediately they start dancing and jumping up and down and even want to participate in the Sankirtan.
start dancing automatically. Just like Kanapati was explaining yesterday about the Tuesday night Harinam, where the guys living in a flat were prepared. They gave the devotees $50 to come up and chant Hare Krishna with them. And then they said, can you come back on Thursday night? And we experience it also. Simply by chanting Hare Krishna, we expand the feeling of bliss, ananda. Automatically it happens. We chant Hare Krishna, then automatically we feel the relief from our material existence, and we begin to feel the pleasure of spiritual engagement. Rajavija Rajaguyam Pavitamidam Uttamam Pratyaksavagamam Damyam Susukam Kartam Avyayam. Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita that by performing devotional service, that one becomes automatically purified. Pavitram idam uttamam. Pavitra means purified. Uttamam means one automatically rises above the mode of ignorance. Tama. And uttama means to go above ignorance, to go beyond the material and into the spiritual platform. That automatically happens for a devotee, and especially for one who performs devotional service with a pure heart. That means no other desire than to please Krishna. Then it's explained that devotional service is all auspicious. So Prabhupada makes the point that even a very young devotee who previously may have been engaged in all sorts of activities influenced by the modes of passion and ignorance, simply by engaging in devotional service, even if they're not very advanced in knowledge or in learning, still by rasavajam risopyasya, by experience or higher taste, through the process of chanting Hare Krishna and rendering service to Krishna, then automatically they're able to give up attraction to lower things and remain fixed in rendering service to Krishna. But it explains in the Bhagavatam, Kapiladev explains in the Bhagavatam, that actually the devotees are so happy to be engaged in devotional service that they're not attracted to other things. Even liberation is unattractive to them. They're not concerned about liberation. They're not concerned about their personal benefit. Their main concern is, how can I be fixed in devotional service? Prabhupada gives the example of Kalavecha Sridhar. Kalavecha Sridhar was a banana leaf merchant, which means he was very, very poor. Because in Bengal, banana trees grow everywhere, so it's not like you have to work hard to get banana leaves. They're everywhere, and you don't really need to go to the merchant to buy them. But they're very cheap. So a banana leaf merchant's not a wealthy man. And Kalavecha Sridhar, even though he wasn't a wealthy man, he would spend 50% of his income on serving the Mother Ganga. And Lord Chaitanya used to visit Kalavecha Sridhar and tease him, even steal his products, and then chastise him for being a cheater by charging too high a price. And of course this gave great pleasure to Kalavecha Sridhar. It gave great pleasure to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to have these exchanges with this very pure-hearted, loving the devotee's servant. So after one exchange, or a number of exchanges with the Lord, Lord Chaitanya revealed his personality to Kalavicha Sridhar, and he said, whatever you want. And illustrating basically that pure devotional service is what actually controls and possesses Krishna, if you like. He revealed himself and he asked Kalavicha Sridhar, whatever you desire, whatever you want, I can satisfy your desire. And Kalavicha Sridhar said, no, I'm happy, just let me be your devotee, let me be fixed in devotional service. So that's really the mood of the devotees, and that's the characteristic, or one of the characteristics of pure devotional service, is that a devotee is very happily engaged and is actually seeking engagement in devotional service without any consideration for themselves. That's pure devotional service. And because devotional service performed in that mood is very sweet and tasty and juicy, if you like, then the devotee hankers for that opportunity. And so as a consequence, then they keep themselves very busy, engaged in the Lord's service. Now, in that mood, then one is able to, because it mentions here, devotional service produces waves of ecstatic love, right, that completely cleanse the soul. So we might wonder, waves of ecstatic love? I don't experience waves of ecstatic love. And in the verse it says here, if one's hairs do not stand on end. Now, you know, how often are our hairs standing on end? Maybe when we sneeze. You know, you sneeze and then you notice your hairs go, then they go down. So, if one's hairs do not stand on end, how can the heart melt? Maybe you guys can come in, or devotees should move forward, because this is the beginning of the pile-up. Huh? They want to sit as far away from the speaker as possible. So, and if the heart does not melt, how can tears of love flow from the eyes? Well, one of the prerequisites for experiencing these symptoms or these feelings of love and affection for the Lord have to be preceded by this pure devotional service. Right? So bhakti has certain qualities, otherwise it becomes then mixed. And if it's mixed with other karma mishra, jnana mishra, if our devotional service is mixed with some material consideration, then because of that mixing, it becomes impure. And as a result of those impurities, then it loses its potency. The ability for it to actually affect the heart of the devotee is diminished. This is why Rupa Goswami begins the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, and Prabhupada said Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu is the law book for ISKCON. Because basically it teaches us right from the word go, here's how to perform, here's how to execute this process. You know, there are so many processes recommended in the Vedas. And if we analyse all of those various processes, as is explained here, that even those processes have the power to purify, like a fire. A fire has the power to purify. They're considered to be very, very small fires in relationship to the fire that can be ignited in the heart by the performance of pure devotional service, Shuddha Bhakti. um, uh, Prabhupada in the Nectar of Devotion and also in the Nectar of Instruction, he gives the example of the elephant. You know, the elephant goes into the river or into the kund, has a bath, but then it comes out and it throws dirt on itself again. So these other processes for purification, they do have the power to purify, but it's observed that persons who perform these purificatory activities, they are still influenced when they've finished the jagya or the sacrifice or the austerity, even the study of the Vedas. They're still again influenced by material desires. Prabhupada gives the example of people going to church and saying their confession, which is purifying. But then again, that's on Sunday, but then on Monday and then for the rest of the week, they go back to performing the same activities. Even we see it in the performance of devotional service. You know, sometimes people think that, and this happens in Vrindavan, happened in Vrindavan when Prabhupada was opening the Krishna Balaram temple there. Devotees sometimes get frustrated by the performance of devotional service and the difficulties that they have to face. And I think, you know, well, I'm a devotee, I'm performing devotional service, so therefore I should be becoming peaceful. I shouldn't have to worry about things. There shouldn't be difficulty in my life. Right? Life should go smoothly and there shouldn't be any problems. And so when they face problems in the performance of their devotional service, then they say, oh, I just want to go off and chant Hare Krishna and read the Srimad Bhagavatam. Right? And this happened in Vrindavan. One of the devotees went to the Babaji's at Radhakund. And when Prabhupada found out about it, he was extremely upset. And he told the devotees, go and get him and bring him here. And this devotee came. And Prabhupada came out of his quarters. As soon as he heard that he was there, Prabhupada came out of his quarters. He was just dressed in his lungi. And he said to the devotee, why have you left us? And he said, why are you becoming like a monkey? And the devotee said, well, the Babaji's have given me opportunity to just sit and chant. And Prabhupada chastised him and he said, well, why didn't you come with me? And why did you go there? Why did you become like a monkey? Meaning, you know, and Prabhupada explains that, you know, a monkey is externally a renunciate, right? Lives in a different tree every night, only eats fruits off of the trees, right? So externally, from the external observation of a monkey, is very renounced, lives a simple life. But, of course, you know, if you look at the monkeys in Vrindavan, they're always, you know, having sex, basically. And Prabhupada saw that. He saw that, you know, living in Vrindavan, Prabhupada saw the Babaji's. He saw externally they're chanting Hare Krishna and performing what it looks like devotional service. But he also saw in their personal lives that they're still attached to material sense gratification. So even though they're performing externally, they're performing devotional service, they're not performing pure devotional service, and they're not following a practice which is, practically speaking, purifying their hearts and bringing them to the point of this purification. You know, devotional service performed properly with the right motivation, with the right mentality, purely, will bring us to the point of purification where our heart becomes cleansed. So it has to be bhakti of a particular quality, not this show bottle, right? Show bottle devotional service. show bottle, meaning, you know, it looks good. The bottle looks good and it's got colour in it, but actually the water is useless because it has no potency. So, Rupa Goswami explains very clearly what devotional service is. It has to be performed without personal motivation, and then when it is performed without personal motivation. And basically, you know, how do we know how to perform devotional service? Basically, we follow the instructions of the spiritual master. We follow the instructions of the previous acharyas. In ISKCON, we follow Srila Prabhupada. And to be successful in devotional service, we follow Srila Prabhupada. Why? He was successful. Why was Srila Prabhupada so successful? Because he followed his guru. And of course, you know, Srila Prabhupada gave us process of devotional service in a very, very potent form that would very, very quickly purify us. And we see that. If we follow Prabhupada's formula for engagement in devotional service, then we find that the devotees make rapid advancement. You know, even though we are not great Vedic scholars, we're not great tapasvis, not very learned, not very renounced, may not have performed pious activities. It doesn't matter, actually. If we may have done none of these things, but if we follow the process of devotional service, especially as Prabhupada has applied it, and it's interesting to note, we were discussing this yesterday, that Prabhupada has embedded within the basic daily program, especially the morning program, evening program, the five most potent items of devotional service: association with the devotees, sadhu sangha, sankirtan, chanting Hare Krishna, Bhagavat Shravan, hearing the Bhagavatam. And it mentions here at the end of this purport, it says, by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, one should ignite the blazing fire of loving service to the Lord. But Prabhupada has given us the Srimad Bhagavatam, but he's also given us these other items: residing in a holy place, which means, you know, we live in a temple, or we create a sanctified atmosphere in our house so that our house also becomes a temple, or at least part of the house becomes a temple, and worship the deities. So pretty much, you know, our activities revolve around worshipping the deities. Rise early in the morning, go to Mangal Aarti. Then you're also engaging in Sankirtan. You're also in the association of the devotees. You're following the instructions of the Bhagavatam. Then we sit down and we chant Hare Krishna, we chant our japa. Then we get up and we greet the deities again, so more deity worship, then more kirtan, then more Bhagavatam, hearing the Bhagavatam. Then active devotional service. You know, we measure a devotee's sadhana by their engagement in devotional service. Devotional service, you know, it's not that our daily activities are some material thing and, you know, just chanting Hare Krishna is the spiritual side of things. But Prabhupada was observant not only in, you know, how much sadhana a person, so-called sadhana if you like, because actually our service is our sadhana also. So Prabhupada encouraged the devotees to chant their rounds, to go to the program, to hear the classes, to read his books. But at the same time also, he was keen to see what their service was. In fact, he pushed them. No, he didn't just push them, he chastised them. They didn't do things properly. You know, Jamuna and Guru Das were staying away from Prabhupada because Prabhupada was pretty furious that the the Krishna Balaram temple wasn't finished. You know, they're promising Prabhupada that the temple will be finished and we'll open up the temple on Janmashtami. Prabhupada sent invitations all out around the world. Then when he got to Vrindavan, he was walking through the temple and he just saw that it was a building site. And he realised, we're not going to be able to open this temple. He was furious. And the devotees, you know, ducked for cover, ran off. So Gurudas and Jamuna were avoiding Prabhupada. And Prabhupada called Jamuna, and because he wasn't seeing her, and he said, you know, why aren't you coming? And she said, she frankly admitted that she was scared of him, scared of his angry mood. And but Prabhupada said, no, you know, you should. Actually, Prabhupada told the story of Balaram chastising the Jamuna and pulling her with his plough. And devotees appreciated that because they realized Prabhupada was absorbed in the mood of Balaram chastising Jamuna, but it was also Prabhupada chastising Jamuna and saying, you know, you should. And, you know, in India, Prabhupada was the GBC, practically speaking, for India, because his disciples were, you know, Prabhupada criticized his disciples and he says, you know, damn cheap Baba. You know, you're the damn cheap Baba, you're getting ripped off by all of these people. And so Prabhupada would get frustrated when he saw his disciples getting cheated left, right and centre by the Indians. You know, one time in Mumbai, Prabhupada saw that the people who he had a contract with to collect coconuts off of the coconut palms in Juhu, they were taking also the leaves. And Prabhupada saw what they were doing and he jumped up and he ran over to this edge of the building where he was having a massage and he called out, Chaitra Guru, which is his disciple. He said, come in. He said, what are you doing? They're stealing the banana, the coconut leaves. And the devotees just hadn't seen it. You know, for them, coconut, you know, leaves is like, you know, it's a few paisa. But Prabhupada said, what can I do? I see they're cheating you. I've got to get up and do something about it. Another time, the devotees, Brahmananda had organised a pandal at Juhu, and the contractor charged them 40,000 rupees. And so, when the contractor came to get paid by Prabhupada, Prabhupada gave him 5,000 rupees. And he was complaining. He said, get out of here, you know, you're already doubling your money with 5,000 rupees. Right? they were going to pay 40,000 rupees. And it happens like that down in the bazaar, you know, as soon as the Western devotees come to Vrindavan, then the rickshaw prices go out of all proportion. Right? So Prabhupada was, you know, just very frustrated by his disciples' inexperience, and he had to personally get in and solve problems. And so Jamuna and Gurudas were also Bhavananda and Japataka. They weren't swamis then in Mayapur. And they wrote to Prabhupada actually and said, you know, we're sorry we've displeased you. And Prabhupada said, no, he said, I know that you're all very sincere and you're working hard. But he said, you know, as the head of the institution and as your guru, it's my duty to, you know, find fault. So Prabhupada was, you know, he wanted the devotees to be strong spiritually. So yes, he provided us with the spiritual program. But he also wanted that the devotees would be actively engaged in devotional service. They would actually do something. Because he saw, you know, the Babajis in Vrindavan, they go off and you know, do their so-called bhajan, but actually they're not becoming purified. Their devotional service wasn't pure, contaminated, and it came out. And Prabhupada saw, because that was Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati's instruction. He actually, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur, they actually vigorously preached against the Babajis because it was the Babajis who were bringing the culture of the Vaishnava culture, the culture of bhakti, into disrepute, because they weren't able to elevate themselves to this Paramahamsa platform simply by chanting Hare Krishna and doing Nirjana Bhajan. They couldn't do it. And Prabhupada saw it, and his disciples especially. Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur already had seen it in Bengal and in the Gaudiya Math, that people weren't able to just go off and read the Bhagavatam and chant Hare Krishna and become purified. They weren't able to do it. And it's interesting, you know, Prabhupada said, you know, on occasion to his disciples, he says, oh, is there a place where I can go? He says, I'm old. You know, at my age, I should be retired. Right? At my age, I should be retired. Everybody my age is not doing anything, but here I am working so hard. Is there a place where I can go and, you know, just write? Is what Prabhupada wanted to do, just write. So the devotees, Prabhupada was in Vrindavan, and he said this to the devotees, and the devotees said, oh, you know, Atreya Rishi said, you can come to Tehran, it's a very nice place, the weather's good, you know, the food is good, you can come there, Prabhupada. And then other devotees said, no, what about New Vrindavan? You can go to New Vrindavan. Then the next day, Prabhupada got a letter from Bhagavan saying, you know, come to London, there's a lot of preaching, and Prabhupada said, very enthused. He said, great, this is good, we'll go to London. And the devotee said, but Prabhupada, yesterday you said that you wanted to go and just write for 6 months. And Prabhupada said that, no, you know, it's my duty to preach. And later on, he was talking to Tamal Krishna Maharaj and I think it was Jayapataka Swami, and he was saying, I'm a warrior and it is my duty to fight. And he actually said, actually, I'm not qualified. Prabhupada said, I'm not qualified to retire. No? And Prabhupada was eminently qualified to retire, but he said, I'm not qualified. He says, I am a warrior, and so I will die fighting on the battlefield. And of course, Tamal Krishna Maharaj says, well, if you're not qualified, then we're certainly not qualified. So we'll never retire. Huh? So this was Prabhupada's mood, that, you know, devotional service should be active, because, you know, this whole idea of, you know, just being able to chant and retire and be a recluse, he saw that it didn't work. But what he did see working was his disciples engaged in the morning program, chanting Hare Krishna, hearing the classes, reading the books, but also active service. And if the service wasn't being performed properly, or there were mistakes, or, you know, errors or whatever, Prabhupada would correct. It's a duty of, as the head of the institution and as the guru, it's my responsibility to correct you. For your benefit. So, in order to perform devotional service and experience the waves of ecstasy, if we like, which has been described here, we have to perform the devotional service. And so, it's in a way that's been prescribed to us by our spiritual master for it to be effective. Right? That's pure devotional service, which means devotional service performed with a desire to please Krishna and obviously to please Krishna's devotees. Not devotional service performed because, you know, these bhajananandis, their mentality is, let me go and liberate myself, which is selfish, actually. Whereas the Goshtiyanandi, which is our line, is, let me go and help others. Then automatically I'll be liberated. Automatically I'll get a benefit. Right? So that's very much our line of devotional service. The devotional activities are there, but also the preaching has to be there. So that we can experience these waves of bliss, if you like. And so tears can come to the eyes. We have to put ourselves out, in other words, for the benefit of others. That's pure devotional service in our line of disciplic succession. And it's not that those activities that we do in our preaching, cleaning, cooking, book distribution, fundraising or whatever, they're material activities and the other things are spiritual activities. In fact, it's interesting, I was talking to yesterday, Rasa Krita Parayana, who lives in Dubai, and he found a nice quote, and he said, Prabhupada was in a conversation in Juhu. And Prabhupada said, we have our spiritual activities and our material activities. But he said, not material activities. Actually, the material activities, they're also spiritual. So our management, our organisation, and our preaching especially, they're not material activities. They're spiritual activities because they're activities given to us by the spiritual master for the pleasure of Krishna. So actually, because they're performed for the pleasure of Krishna, it's part of sevanam, which is part of the nine items of devotional service, which means service to the deity, actually. Spreading the glories of Krishna means spreading the glories of the deity. So that's deity worship. What to speak of, it's also kirtanam, preaching, chanting. Right? So all of the activities of a devotee, practically speaking, is part of their sadhana. And when all of those activities are performed without any personal motivation and for the pleasure of Krishna, for the pleasure of the devotees, ultimately for the pleasure of those who we're bringing to Krishna consciousness also, that's considered to be pure devotional service. And when that pure devotional service is performed in that correct consciousness, then that sundarananda visheshatma, that bliss, if you like, of devotional service will automatically manifest in the heart of a devotee. Huh? We shouldn't be, trying to find it. It's actually already there. We just have to uncover it. At the moment, it's covered over by a big, big, thick, thick covering of false ego. Right? Where we think we're the doer. Kartaham iti manyate. Right? I think I'm the doer. Actually, everything has been done by Krishna. But the process of devotional service is so powerful that it'll automatically dissolve the false ego. Nice verse in the third canon of the Bhagavad Gita. It automatically gets dissolved by the process of devotional service. We're suffering the reactions of our past misdeeds for countless births, and so therefore we're covered over by a fair amount of ignorance. That's one of the reasons why initially when we engage in devotional service we don't automatically feel this shunyarananda all the time. It's there, but we don't feel it. It's like our devotional service is like an unripe mango. So when you bite into an unripe mango, it's like, it's sour. It doesn't taste very good. As our devotional service matures and fructifies, then, it becomes sweet and juicy like a mango. But in the beginning, we have to perform, and so therefore we perform, initially our devotional service is performed as a sadhaka. So it's practice. It's devotional service in practice. And, because the five items of the panchanga bhakti items, the five main angas of bhakti, are so powerful, every now and again, especially in the kirtan, or even in the Bhagavatam class, in the association of devotees, or worshipping the deity, we get a glimpse, or we connect to that bliss. And maybe tears come to the eyes. Usually tears are coming to our eyes because we're feeling some pain. Oh, why me? And occasionally also, oh, Krishna. Right? And then when that comes, that purifies the heart, immensely purifies the heart, which is described here. And then that's why the process of devotional service is likened to a blazing fire. These other performances, they're purifying, yogic practice, performing austerities, sense control, mind control, study of the Vedas, they're purifying, but But they don't have the full capacity to extinguish this desire for, you know, personal sense gratification, basically, sinful activities. Whereas the performance of pure devotional service has such potency that it can eradicate sinful desires so they never come back again. That's if it's performed purely. Does anybody have any comments or questions?
On behalf of everybody, I want to compliment you for a very, very nice lecture.
That's not a question, but anyway, go on.
I spent 2 months in Vrindavan Deanery.
Yes.
And then I come back.
Now you've come back very effulgent.
Melbourne is so beautiful. Melbourne, excellent prasadam.
Yep.
Nice deep worship.
Yep.
And excellent lecture.
Prabhupada said, this is not Melbourne, this is Vrindavan.
I was very scared about that because you were telling five Gangas Bhakti.
Yes.
And you didn't say Vrindavan specially.
Yeah.
But actually, Melbourne is like Vrindavan.
Yeah, I was thinking about that yesterday. Yep, you're right. Prabhupada, and you know, Prabhupada has such potency, you know, that he was able to establish these spiritual embassies all over the world. Even I was talking with Tarika last night, and she was recounting a conversation she had with Anuttama. Anuttama was saying, and he was talking about Gauravani. He said, when Gauravani was 25, I used to worry about giving him the keys to my car. But Prabhupada gave sannyas to his disciples at 25 and gave them, you know, whole countries to preach to. Right? So Anuttama was, you know, thinking of the irony, you know, I'm worried about giving the keys to my car that my son is 25, but Prabhupada gave them temples and, you know, everything. And somehow by Prabhupada, well, Prabhupada obviously empowered personality was able to establish places like Melbourne, Los Angeles, London, New York, you know, and even places that Prabhupada never went. We're lucky. We are extremely fortunate. You know, the devotees, just like Gauravani and the devotees are saying how, you know, they came to Melbourne and they came to the Prabhupada's rooms and they felt like Prabhupada was here. We were very fortunate. We really can feel Prabhupada's presence in this place. We're so used to it, we're so accustomed to it, we just think, oh yeah, it's this temple, let's go to the temple. She'll be right. There's Aniruddha. There's a Chintaroopa. There's Radhaballabha. There's Prabhupada. But you know, we're really with Krishna and Prabhupada here. Prabhupada didn't just do it here, he did it all over the world. Plus the temples where he didn't, there are temples where the atmosphere is exists and Prabhupada didn't even go there. Amazing. Okay, we have to finish here. No, it's 8:30. I've got to stop. Otherwise I contradict myself.
Guru Das? Yeah.
What about Guru Das?
You were telling about Yamuna.
Yeah.
About Guru Das, you wanted to complete.
Guru Das? No, I finished that story by saying Prabhupada said to Bhavananda and Jayaprataka Das, they were brahmacharis in those days, that because Jamuna was scared to come before Prabhupada, and Prabhupada told her, you know, you shouldn't be scared. And he told Bhavananda and Jayaprataka, then brahmacharis, you know, I'm the head of the institution and I'm your guru, and it's my responsibility to chastise you. So it's for your benefit. And actually, a disciple feels happy being chastised by a spiritual master. Sort of. We don't like getting told off, but actually, and you know, it's actually a sign of an immature disciple if they become dejected and despondent because they got chastised by their guru. Not very advanced. And if a disciple can't chastise his guru, If a guru can't chastise his disciple, then what kind of a disciple is he? He's not worth having, in one sense. Mm-hmm. Right? If you can't be instructed by your spiritual master and corrected, then what kind of a disciple are you? And if you're not clear about, the lady asked me the other day, you know, have you ever had difficulty following the instruction of your guru? I said, yeah, of course. But if you're not clear about how, you know, if you're not clear about an instruction, then what's our process? Yeah, ask. You said this, I'm confused. How do I apply your instruction when I'm not sure how to do it? If you're submissive and humble in your inquiry, then that's how you clarify things. Right? But if you, oh, my guru told me off when I'm like this, who does he think he is? It happens. You know, I've seen it. Disputes amongst the disciples, the guru, and they won't do what the guru tells them to do. I've seen it. I know of it. I've seen it, and I know of it. That's not pure devotional service, by the way. Yeah. Okay, Gwendra Shimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.